tuned in, and that chart we're going to have.
My husband's out of town this week, so I have to make sure my son gets
all the things that we've laid on.
Because he's,
you know,
how
it goes. Well, he's 17.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, yeah. Yeah, they need attention there.
Outside of context.
Yeah.
Did he get his college application?
Morning, everybody. Today is March 20, 2013. The E-12 Finance Division come to order, and we have four bills before us. First is Senate File 956, Senator Weber, Disabled Access Levy Authority for School Districts 2904 and Tracy. Welcome, Senator Weber, and for your testifiers, and you know, please state your name when we get to you for our tape. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This morning, I'm pleased to present to you Senate File number 956. Basically, in the early 1990s, there were many concerns about buildings, school buildings, and the disabled access issues at that time. And the legislature gave all schools in Minnesota a six-year window until 98 to levy up to $300,000 for disabled access. Many of the schools took advantage of it, and some of them authorized it later in that time period. And as I understand, they were given approximately an eight-year time period in order to utilize all of that. At that point in time, Tracy only levied a $50,000 amount for that, but at this point in time have had some issues arise that they really need to have the $250,000 of authority in order to make improvements in a number of areas. So at this point in time, they're basically asking for an extension so that they may levy this $250,000 over a two-year period. At this point, I am pleased to have with me today Superintendent Loy Wolber from the Tracy School District, and I will turn it over to him for his comments.
Thank you, Senator, and welcome, Superintendent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today. I was...
And for the record?
I'm sorry. And my name is Loy Wolber, and the superintendent of the Tracy Area School, as well as the Westbrook Walnut Grove Schools.
And Superintendent, just tell us in the state where you're at and a little pitch about the district.
This is my second year at the Tracy Area School, and we are pretty much between Marshall and Worthington. Just a few miles east of Highway 59. Then my 12th year at Westbrook Walnut Grove, I share 50% at each district.
Okay.
And we're a district where the two districts, Westbrook Walnut Grove and Tracy Area, are between 20 and 30% among students. So we're kind of the smallest schools in the state with that kind of a population. And so we're very fortunate out that way. In the farming communities to have that in our districts.
Okay, thank you.
And about 11 years ago, I was before this group asking for the same authority for the Westbrook Walnut Grove School. And I think back at that time with the levy authority, issues have changed and some of the buildings have changed, and we just have the different needs as far as some of the bathroom issues as well as accessibility into the building. Some of the parking lot and the sidewalks, there are some issues that we do need to take care of.
Okay. Members, questions? Comments? Anyone in the audience that'd like to testify? Proposal. And I'll ask our fiscal staff or policy staff, so any comments on the impact again if we were to put this in our omnibus bill? Mr. Wilms?
I have no comment at this time about that.
Okay, and I believe the fiscal impact would be $125,000.
Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, is the intent to have this levy payable for revenue in fiscal 15 and 16?
Mr. Wolber, you want to give the exact years?
If we have this authority, then it would be pay 14 and pay 15, and that would be 100% local levy.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Well, thank you very much for stating the need. It'll be taken for consideration in our omnibus bill that'll be rolled out in a couple of weeks. So thank you, and we will lay it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Next, we have Senate File 929. Is Senator Nino here yet? As testifiers are, but we'll get back to that. We'll go next to Senator Hoffman, Senate File 933. And he has several testifiers, and to the extent you can all be accommodated at the table, please join him. Senate File 933, Compensatory Education Revenue Allocation.
Great. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me be in front of you today. I actually enjoy this view from here. It took me an hour and a half to get through traffic just to get here, so I'm wondering if everybody else is having the same problem. But we have some handouts for folks, so if, Michael, you want to come around and get them, that would be great. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I bring Senate File 993 to for you as a committee. It's a decisive step toward leveling the playing field for school districts across the state. And it actually, for the first time, resolves a fix for compensatory dollars. And and how we've gotten here, the formula has never worked for districts like ours. And I served 8 years on the Anoka Hennepin School Board. And what occurred years ago was a bipartisan effort to look at what does it cost to educate a child who might be a free and reduced. And what you have in front of you as Senate File 933 is that the example is our district, the largest in the state, who have been shorted, the millions that it takes, finally figured out that if you concentrate — I hate to use the word concentrate because the compensatory education dollars — if you concentrate your efforts toward data-driven results and evidence-based results, what you get is good outcomes. And we did that, and by doing that, you'll hear testimony. The Carey Center from the University of Minnesota shows that this school district was able to close the achievement gap by third grade when it put its efforts toward evidence-based, data-driven practices. What I'm going to do here is offer a final fix that levels it so a kid's a kid's a kid in the state of Minnesota, and it doesn't fall off the dial, but it really looks at putting the compensatory dollars according to an individualized student need, which we all have that. So, and because what we saw in the past was, for example, in Anoka Hennepin or in Osseo, is sometimes we get about anywhere between 50% or even 30% less than what some other districts get on the compensatory side of it. But I just want to tell you, the pilots that are out there are short-term fixes. This Senate file is a long-term fix that equals the playing field for everybody out there regarding compensatory education. And so with that, this long-term solution, I bring to you Dr. Mary Wolverton, who is from the Anoka Hennepin School District, Lori Reich, who is the Director of Instructional, and also, of course, Superintendent Danny Carlson. So, members, I'll hold some more comments to the end as well, but we'll start with, I think, Dr. Wolverton or Danny. Superintendent Carlson.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Welcome back, Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Danny Carlson, Superintendent of the Anoka Hennepin School District. Thank you to Senator Hoffman and really this committee for your efforts this session to try to address this long-term fix for the compensatory formula. It's really important to us, and I'll share a bit about that. As I testified last time, we're trying to avoid teacher cuts of 200 to 250 teachers, and we're already at the top of the Metro Exu class size rankings, and so we're really trying to avoid that. Our school board is very unlikely to make that cut. So then what we're left with as superintendent is trying to negotiate a contract for a hard freeze for our 6,000 employees we have. And that's not going to be easy when they just had one 2 years ago. So we're in a difficult spot. But the current formula, as you know, penalizes really a district that has large schools, and that's what Anoka-Hennepin has. Compensatory revenue is a critical piece in supporting our efforts to address the achievement gap. As a district, our achievement gap in reading is 17.5%, one of the lowest in the state. And I'm particularly proud of the efforts of Dr. Mary Wolverton and Lori Resch, and I'm pleased to have them with us today. Dr. Mary Wolverton is our Associate Superintendent of Elementary Schools. Lori Resch is our Director of Curriculum Instruction and Assessment. And the work they have done is significant. One example I'll just give you, and then they can speak for themselves. But the fourth grade reading achievement gap is 11.8%. That's among the lowest achievement gap anywhere. And I'm really proud of the work they've done. And I couldn't, with these two coming with me today, I couldn't avoid also mentioning our administration cost in the district is 3%. Again, among the lowest in the state. But here are living examples of why it's the lowest. Mary Wolverton, to my left, has 27 direct reports, 24 elementary principals and three others. Lori Resch has 30 direct reports. And all I'm saying is there's a cost for that administration 3% number, and this is two people that have done an extraordinary job for us. I'm pleased to have them with us. So, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would refer to Dr. Mary Wolverton.
Well, I actually think Lori's going to start.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lori Resch. I'm the Director of Elementary Curriculum Instruction and Assessment for Anoka-Hennepin. And this morning I will be speaking a bit about the history of the pilot and what we did during this pilot time. So the purpose of the Anoka-Hennepin Compensatory Education Pilot was to determine...
Ms. Resch, a little closer to the mic.
Please. Oh, certainly.
Thank you.
The purpose of the Anoka-Hennepin Compensatory Education Pilot Program was to determine how the reallocation of compensatory funds in a manner not based on concentrations of poverty impacted three aspects of the elementary program. First was program structure, second, change in instructional delivery, and third, opportunities for intense professional development. The reallocation allowed us to change the program structure in both reading and mathematics at three pilot sites. At these schools, a number of research-based practices were implemented over the 4 years of the pilot. The goals of the program focused both on students and teachers. For students, the goals were to have all students reach high academic standards, attain proficiency in literacy and mathematics as measured on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, or MCAs. And for teachers, the goals were to vary or differentiate instruction to meet the needs of diverse learners and use assessment to inform these instructional decisions. Ongoing evaluation of the pilot was conducted by the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement, CARI, and we have all four reports here with us today, at the University of Minnesota for the first 4 years of the pilot. The pilot can be thought of as occurring in two phases. The first phase focused on the three pilot sites. In phase one, observations by the CARI evaluators indicated that students in pilot classrooms where teachers instructed math lessons with high fidelity had a higher number of students proficient on MCAs at 84% than classrooms implemented with low fidelity, 69%, or control students with a proficiency of 78%. Phase one components found to be effective were focused small group interventions, data meetings, fidelity to district curriculum and the state standards, professional development to support implementation of district curriculum and interventions. Data from the CARI observations was then used to identify which areas we needed to focus on in our professional development to support that fidelity of implementation. CARI evaluators stated that the program exemplified the continuous improvement process. The program was tweaked numerous times over the course of 4 years based on evaluation results. One example of these tweaks was the elimination of team teaching. Team teachers were a program structure change that was used during the first 3 years, but evaluation results showed that it was an inefficient use of resources. It was determined to be a better use of resources to shift those team teachers to academic intervention specialists who would then provide individual support for students and small group interventions, such as math recovery. This program change in the fourth year of the pilot freed up monies to be used then for expansion of the successful pilot components to extension sites. In phase two of the pilot, academic intervention specialists were added to extension sites to provide individual interventions, small group instruction, and facilitate data meetings. At these sites, there was an upward trend for achievement gains measured as measured by the Measures of Academic Progress, or MAP, as the number of interventions increased. Furthermore, there was also a significant decrease in the achievement gap from the fall of 2008 to spring of 2009 at the extension sites. It is clear that students in classrooms where the program was implemented with high fidelity consistently made greater gains than students in classrooms not implementing the program well or at all. Continued focus on fidelity of implementation of the district curriculum, state standards, and interventions, and measurement processes of the regarding the variables that are critical to program success and improve student performance. Dr. Wolverton will speak to the application of what we have learned from these first 4 years of the pilot program to our current practice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Mary Wolverton, Associate Superintendent. I've been fortunate to be an administrator in the Anoka-Hennepin School District for 15 years. I'm serving as an elementary principal, a middle school principal, and now in my role as an associate. What I'd like to share with you is what are our applied learnings. After we completed our work with the University of Minnesota, what the grant afforded us the opportunity to do is to expand our learning to all of our schools. At the time that we started doing that, we had 30 elementary schools. With our fiscal responsibility in our district, we did close 6 elementary schools and currently have 24. So the opportunity the grant afforded us is that we could take our learnings and expand it to all 24 schools. And in those 24 schools, 10 of them are non-title schools. So it was critical that we could afford our students in those schools interventions and opportunities for the staff with support with intervention specialists to address their struggling learners. An example of that is one of our elementary schools that's a non-title school, Andover Elementary, largest elementary school in the state of Minnesota. Currently, they have anywhere from 10 to 12 first grade classrooms on any given year. Without the ability and the flexibility with the compensatory grant, we would not be able to provide any intervention support with additional staffing in that building. What we have done in the expansion is we've provided baseline interventions in all 24 schools. Each school has an academic intervention specialist, a math recovery teacher that specifically targets first grade students in our schools, providing intensive interventions, working on number sense and algebraic thinking. And in that, what we've been able to do is see a significant impact on student achievement. If you look at, when we look at our student achievement data, one of the things that we know in our 7 years of data that we've examined since the start of this grant is we've continued to close the achievement gap in our district and also increase the percentage of students that are proficient on the MCAs. And an example of that, just looking at, we selected our black students and our white students, looking at that achievement gap. Our black students in our district are the largest subgroup in our students of color. And in the time since the grant was implemented in our district in fifth grade in math, we've decreased the gap between our black students and our white students by 11.4%. Pretty significant, especially considering the increased rigor with the MCAs and our math standards. So we're very proud of that. What we also know in looking at our student achievement data, on the backside of your handout, you'll see a kind of a quick visual that was put together by our research evaluation and testing department. And it kind of does a nice, simple way of explaining the new state accountability system, the multiple measures rating system. And in that, when I look at our 24 elementary schools, 14 of them are title schools. Of those 14 schools, 9 have been designated by the Department of Education as receiving significant designation for either being a reward school or a celebration school. That, I think, is in large part to the learnings we've received from the grant and what we've been able to do with the compensatory flexibility. Three of those schools are reward schools, six are celebration schools. We have no priority schools and have only one focus school, which I think is pretty remarkable considering we're the largest school district in the state of Minnesota. Where are we at currently? What we are currently doing with our math recovery, our academic intervention specialists in all of our schools are two things. We're pushing up and we're pushing down in relation to support for our students and our teachers. In pushing up, our math recovery teachers are very proficient and have significant knowledge in number sense, looking at supporting students with number sense and algebraic thinking. So what they are currently doing is they are working with our intermediate teachers and supporting our fourth and fifth grade students who struggle with those concepts. And in our district, we have also expanded out co-located kindergarten readiness sites. And so those math recovery teachers are now working with early childhood special ed teachers as well as kindergarten readiness students in relation to supporting them with their developing number sense and instructional strategies. Why is that critical? The piece that was alluded to a little bit earlier, we know that in our looking at our data in our district, that as we look at kindergarten, we know that 95% of our students in kindergarten, if they're proficient at the end of the school year on the state standards, 95% of them are proficient on the state test. And so we've really taken this opportunity with the compensatory and targeted on students.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when we're alluding to the conversation of the grant, it's that pilot, the compensatory pilot that 8 years ago then Representative Dietrich along with Representative Abler and it was a bipartisan, Senator, where you're part of that conversation as well. And one of the things that this school district did was to promise that they would drive this whole conversation by data. Every 2 years, they're always coming back to try to get the fix. But what this bill does is it says, no, we know what it costs to make sure that a child who's a child is a child for the compensatory side. And this levels that playing field, equalizes that factor, and says, so in the long term, this is a long-term fix, which is less money to like Anoka-Hennepin School District than it would be in the pilot project. So you see the cost sheets in front of you, but I just wanted to point that out. And I do want to just, again, notate that it's a long-term fix to a long-term imbalance. And Senator, Mr. Chair, and Senate committee members, the bill will allow our district to focus on what we need to really focus on, and that's good instruction to a child. And so with that, I hope you can pass this Senate File 933, and we can really truly get at fixing the compensatory problem. And let me just add to this, Mr. Chair. In the past, there's been lots of discussion about, you know, leveraging one against the other. But, no, this just equalizes it and says we know because of the data here, that's found data, what it really costs to educate a child that's within that free and reduced section. So thank you.
Thank you. And I noticed that Denise Dietrich, former representative, was on the agenda. Did she want to share comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Whichever
yes.
perspective she would like. Welcome, Ms. Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association and obviously a former state representative who has worked on this issue for quite some time. But as far as the Minnesota School Boards Association, we support this bill, Senate File 933. And I'd like to just highlight some of the reasons. First of all, is because this bill addresses, I think, the most pressing educational need that we have in our state right now, and that is closing the achievement gap. It has a very long history, and I would venture to say at some points it has been wrought with unfairness and has not given us exactly the results that we have all been desiring for the past 10, 15 years. And so we are looking for a way to find a solution to this. Because right now the achievement gap is costing us a lot of money. no matter what. And in the past, what we have done is brought lots of little programs, lots of little pieces together and trying to solve this. And some would argue that in the long run that that has just cost us a lot of money with very little results. The other reason that we support this is because we have now a statewide solution, and we greatly appreciate that. We have been asking for many years for school districts to be innovative, bring your innovation, bring your good ideas, demonstrate how you have solved a problem, and then so we can roll it out statewide. Well, this is exactly what this pilot program has done. It brings you a model that works. It addresses the most pressing education need in the state, and it is replicable. So what we would we think that it is time to roll it out now statewide and let every school district in the state have the advantage that the Anoka-Hennepin School District has had with their compensatory dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Senator Stump, followed by Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Carlson, what are you going to do with all your extra time if this gets passed? No, really, Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Have you extrapolated out the what would happen to other school districts that would have, both large populations or some very small populations? I mean, what would be the ramifications across the state? And that might be something that our research people should look at before we pass this. But
Superintendent Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Member Senator Stumpf, I'm an old art teacher, so I can give you a little bit of a visual on the issue. The compensatory formula goes like this. It's as the concentration formula goes, so there's a fast swoop up, but it takes you a long time to get there. So we're way on the edge of we're not even close. We get about $1,300 a student. Osseo gets $1,774. Minneapolis gets $2,475. St. Paul gets $2,575. And Senator Stumpf, I can kind of hear former Senator Pogemiller speaking in my ear at the moment, and he's not going to like this. But I've always felt it should be a diagonal line that goes like this, not a swoop. And what this does is it raises the base of that diagonal line up to 1,600. So everybody, no one loses any money by this. You only gain in those areas that have numbers of students in poverty. And that, as former Representative Dietrich said, that's going on across the state. Everybody's getting poorer in their school districts. So, and we're the average district. At 34% poverty, we're the average in the state. So goes Anoka-Hennepin. Any district that's close to that average is going to benefit by that $1,600 per poor student. So it's a great permanent fix. It's something that's needed. I thought Denise Dietrich said it well. It's been a long time coming. We don't need to do the pilot anymore. We know what needs to be fixed, and it's time to do it.
Senator Bonhoff and Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, my first question was similar to Senator Stumpf's, and then I just wanted to see the runs. I don't know where runs done for this bill as to how it would affect the school districts.
Mr. Chair and Senators, we have prepared a preliminary run. I would like to sort of sanity check that against the fiscal note that came in overnight. Okay. And I will adjust that and make it available to the committee today.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
yes,
Senator Hoffman, I don't know who could answer that, but the way I like it, so please understand that my questions aren't from trying to unravel it, but more to understand its implications. It seems to me that you would, in fact, be taking the school districts with the highest concentration of poverty. You would take them down because they wouldn't be getting $2,400 anymore. They'd be getting $1,600. No. Could you explain that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff. The concentration factor has never worked for districts like ours, because we have efficiencies and created efficiencies by taking populations. And we have some of the largest middle schools, some of the largest elementary schools, some of the largest high schools in the state. And center-based programs that could be housed in one spot that increases concentration levels or boundaries being adjusted to increase those concentration levels, we've always seen as poor public policy. This specifically targets, we know because of the data, what it costs to educate a child above and beyond in the compensatory education side of it. This just levels that down to $1,600. And now I know, Superintendent, there was one more thing that you wanted to add to that. So,
well, Mr. Chair.
Superintendent Carlson.
To Senator Bonoff's question, the concentration formula remains. That's why Senator Pogemiller is not screaming at me at this moment. The concentration formula remains. All you're doing is fixing the base. Yep. So you're just bringing other districts up. You're not changing the 2575 that goes to St. Paul or the 2475 to Minneapolis or even the 1774 to Osseo. They all will remain at those higher amounts. They're getting, we get $16.3 million now. Osseo for 8,000 students gets $14.7 million. For Minneapolis at 23,000, they get $57 million. 28,000 almost St. Paul, $71 million. They get those same amounts.
Thank you. And then my final question is, you talk about using this as an opportunity to replicate what you discovered works, but there's nothing in the bill that instructs school districts to use the strategies that Anoka-Hennepin has used. So, frankly, I don't see any conclusion that if we were to make this fix that any other district would have the same results, because you did some best practices that we do know work in terms of the intervention, in terms of, you know, one-on-one with students. There's nothing in this bill that directs that practice.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bond, that's a great point. You know, we know what the data shows. I mean, it's here, and you're driving home a good point of how do you share that best practice with the rest of the players in the field so that all the school districts are doing what we know works. And, you know, my whole point here was we were trying to get a long-term fix on the financial side of it because we know the data is in there. I'd be more than happy to get this go on the road with you and tour on how we can get this best practice, because we know this works.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, if I were to support changing the formula in this way, I would be most comfortable if there was accompanying language that made it contingent on using the models that have been proven with data.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senator Bonhoff, you have done great work on government collaboration and all that type of stuff, and joint powers and all that type of stuff. So it would not be a wonder that you would notice that that's missing in the bill. And you're right. But I think that given with people with experience like yourself and others, that it would be very easy to add something to this bill, saying that this money would now be dependent on a replicable model that that has been gotten the same proven results of closing the achievement gap.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Johnson.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, you're talking about the bottom line of the slope, and how much more will this take to do that? How much more money for as a statewide figure?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, research, our folks have done a fund minimum provided. If you look at your, we got this. We didn't get notice that we were going to be heard today till yesterday. So, Jay, you turned this around, 3 o'clock this morning? I mean, you did some amazing work.
Well, MMB deserves the credit, and MDEM, sorry, those two.
Kevin, thank you. Good job. Can you clarify this, please, for
on the fiscal
members
note?
Of the
I think we have $113 million in new money for the biennium.
That would be new money, Mr. Chair, then,
yes,
for the biennium? Okay. That was one of my questions. The second one is, you know, I've been keeping in my mind when the superintendent from Osseo was here and said they had 80% low and reduced, free and reduced lunch. 80% And they, what does Minneapolis, what percent is Minneapolis, do you know, in or St. Paul in free and reduced?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, Osseo is 50% free, 50%, 40% free and reduced. Oh, we're okay. At 34% free and reduced. Representative, or Senator, jeepers, cramity, Superintendent Carlson, Minneapolis is at 70, St. Paul's at 73.27, and Minneapolis is at 65.27% free and reduced.
Okay.
So
okay.
There are pockets, you know, if you look at, again, if you look at pieces of Anoka-Hennepin in the southern part, you know, we have elementary, Evergreen Park is at 82% free and reduced. Well, you know, our district is big. It's gigantic. And what we know is that, again, it's not good public policy to concentrate this issue. It's rather, it's good public policy to have let the data drive what we're doing for best practice. And it's right here. I mean, it's definitely there. And it's this is a long-term fix. We're finally looking at this longitudinal.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Superintendent Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members and Senator Johnson, not too far from your house and my house, is University Avenue, which now has 60% poverty in an elementary school in Blaine. And we are rapidly changing, and the poverty is moving from south to north. This is a critical fix for the time. The other thing, as long as I'm speaking, I'd like to say to Senator Bonhoff's point, I really think if you make receiving the money contingent on using the model, what I would argue from our learning is then we would also add in that flexibility of using a compensatory. So if we could do that as part of the fix, say, you get flexibility with that. If you choose the money, you have to use the best practices model. I think that makes really good sense.
That'll be noted.
Thank you.
I had a question, Superintendent. Do you know how many students entering K are ready in your district?
I can't
Absolutely.
It's an excellent question, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Currently in our district, in our we have about 2,600 kindergarten students. When we did our baseline data collection in the fall in the area of math, we had approximately 20% of our students that were K-ready. At the end of the year last year, in the 11-12 school year, of our kindergarten students, and we hadn't been working with the grant pushing down into kindergarten as of last year. Last year, we only had 40% of our students meeting the state standards at the end of kindergarten. So what we are doing this year is pushing those math recovery supports into kindergarten to try to increase our proficiency at the end of K. In that, we've been struggling a bit because we have currently four different models of kindergarten in our district: free all-day K, fee-based, every other day K, and then a KIPP intervention program. So next year we've been fortunate. Our superintendent and our board is helping us with supporting those kindergarten classrooms. But our concentration with the grant has been in first grade.
And just in the context when we talk about, you know, the overall goal, closing that achievement gap and, you know, lifting achievement for everyone, attacking this early on, how active is your early education program, and have you tracked how successful that
is? I smile because we're very proud of the work that we're doing with that. Right now, for the last 2 years, we've been collaborating with early childhood special ed and our community education early education programs. We have been aligning state standards and back mapping our kindergarten standards into our four-year-old programs and our early childhood special ed programs. The other piece early on that we did is we are tracking all of our four-year-olds in our MARS system so we can track their data and look at their growth and their trend data. And then the other piece that we have been doing in that collaboration is two pretty significant things. We are writing our curriculum documents for all of our four-year-old programs to align with our kindergarten standards. And then the other piece that we have done with that is all of our early childhood directors and supervisors collaborate with the K-5 principals. They're all participating in the Minnesota Principals Academy. They're all participating in any professional development we do on data and on professional learning communities. So I would say that by the end of this year, you'll see some pretty significant things in relation to our K readiness programs being strongly aligned. And I think it will actually, I'm optimistic thinking it's going to be a pretty significant model at the state level for other people to look at and learn from.
Are families with students at risk, poverty, or however you want to evaluate that for preschool that we're targeting, are they aware of your programs, and to what extent is there a waiting list?
I can't, Mr. Chair, I can't speak to the wait list right now. I could look at that information, but what we've done in this last year is used some of the literacy financial aid and expanded out our K readiness program with families living in poverty, families that have students who are ELL or early childhood special ed. And in our elementary schools, we have 8 co-located sites where we offer free preschool programming in our high poverty schools to those families and do an outreach. Merrily Christensen Adams, our early childhood director, has really been doing great outreach. We are in the process right now of developing, and I just met with our communications department yesterday, doing significant outreach in Anoka County and Hennepin County, not only with licensed daycare providers and also with private daycare providers, but we are doing an outreach program with all of the area medical clinics to start reaching our families of our 3-year-olds, because we know that many of them are not bringing their children in for early childhood screening and are not aware of the opportunities we can afford them.
Thank you. And I know that wasn't directly in the bill, but it relates to the overall policy objective, which we'll be carefully reviewing as we put together our bill. Any further comments or questions by the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this proposal? If not, Senator Hoffman, thank you very much. You have come forward with what has been demonstrated proof in the results of a pilot program. You have the data, and certainly it's an option that we will review as we look at available money and putting it together. So we'll lay Senate File 933 over and look forward to a continued discussion and but, you know, Senator Hoffman, concluding remarks.
Mr. Chair, thank you. If anybody wants some light reading, be more than happy to sit down and go through the data. The Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the University of Minnesota, this says why it's important that we concentrate our efforts on best practice that works, and this bill fixes the long-term issues that we have in front of us and closes the achievement gap. So thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you to all testifiers. Senator Nenow, Senate File 929. And if his testifiers could join him, I believe that's Brad Lundell, Jerry Hansen, and Julie Belisle. We have before us Senate File 929, General Ed Disparity Aid Designation for Schools. I believe we do have some handouts on that as well. Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is a proposal. Over the years, as I've served in the Senate, I've authored or co-authored various bills on the subject of funding equity, some of which require upfront money. Others would have changed the way that money is allocated as it comes in newly into the funding stream. There's no question, and the testifiers will touch on this, there's no question that we have dramatic variances and in many cases quite astonishing inequity in the amount of money that schools are getting. Some of that is structural, just the way our funding formulas work. Some of that has to do with geographic, demographic challenges with the ability to raise local operating levies. North Branch, for example, is become, however that has turned out, has become a little bedroom community with a very, very low commercial industrial base, has not, in 10 years, has not been able to pass an operating levy. They did once pass a bonding request to expand the school so they could stop renting so many spaces or modular units for a classroom space. When we had the tremendous population growth, we've seen the homeowners in North Branch and also in the Cambridge-Isani area, when we had this population explosion in the exurbs, saw property values skyrocket. So their property taxes were going up in increasingly fast. And when schools would go out to ask for operating levies, the homeowners, property owners just couldn't take it on because of the tremendous increase in property valuation. And now that we've seen the economic challenges that we have now, the opposite problem is going on. They've seen 30, 40, 50% decreases in property values, but yet property taxes still staying high and not being able to do anything about it. This is a bill that, in short, would create equity aid for those districts that are at the average or above the average. They would not see any benefit from this. But for those districts that are below the average for general education funding, if they're below 90% of the average, they would become eligible for this equity aid funding stream. And with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I will let the testifiers give a few words here.
Thank you, Serenino. Welcome in each testifier. Please state your name for the tape.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with the Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I want to thank you, and I want to thank Senator Nino for introducing this bill. This is we believe in Schools for Equity and Education that this is a valid way to look at funding system and correcting the funding system. It certainly zeroes in on kind of the lowest funded districts. There are districts that have high levels of categorical revenue high levels and various levels of referendum. These are districts that have low levels of categorical and low levels of referendum. So it's zeroing in on kind of if you put that in a quadrant, this is the lower right. This is the people that are low in both of those categories. Certainly there's you're really zeroing in on some targeting some money, some districts that really do need money. And the testifiers today will talk about that. I believe that, you know, I've talked to many of you about some of my other ideas or some of the other ideas Schools in Equity and Education has about looking at, there are districts that have high levels of referendum, and one of the reasons they have high levels of referendum is they get very little in terms of categorical. I think the previous bill that Senator Hoffman came forward with shows districts that have low levels of categorical that need to be bolstered. And so I think that there are many ways to get to greater equity in funding. We view this as a way to really zero in on those districts. And I will turn it over to Jerry Hansen, the superintendent of Malacca, who will be followed by Julie Belial, a parent from the North Branch School District, to talk about their particular challenges and how this bill would help them.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jerry Hansen, superintendent of schools in Malacca. I'm here to speak on behalf of Senator Nienau's bill, and I would urge you to support that bill. Malacca, like school districts across central Minnesota, is property poor. In other words, the value of our property is significantly less than the property in other school districts. This results in a tax burden for our citizens that is 2 to 5 times greater than property owners in some other school districts. We are in the bottom 10 to 15% when it comes to per pupil funding across the state of Minnesota. We do have an operating levy in Malacca, $1.02. It passed this fall by a margin of 60% yes and 40% no. When I talk with citizens about the need to generate money locally for operating levies, some school districts go out and they tell their residents it's the cost of a takeout pizza or a cost of a night at the movies. I'm here to tell you my citizens have already given those things up. I talk to them instead about the price of gasoline and the cost of milk. It's not that our taxpayers don't support education and they don't value their schools. It's that they can't afford it. They need to pay 2 to 5 times more to generate the same amount of revenue. It would be like asking people in Malacca to pay $17 for a gallon of milk or a gallon of gasoline when they could drive 40 miles or 60 miles to another district and buy that same gallon of gas or gallon of milk for $3.50. Students from our area are going to compete with for jobs, for colleges, with students not just from Malacca, not just from North Branch, not just from Cambridge, not just from Hinckley, not just from Holdingford, but with people from all around the state, all around the country, and all around the globe. This bill is asking you to not let educational opportunity for our students be bypassed because of where they live. Please, once again, support Senator Nino's bill.
Thank you, Superintendent. Ms. Boyle.
Okay, I'm a little nervous, Chairman and members of the committee. As a parent of North Branch, I have two students in the district. So I come to you with my little pink recipe cards all ready to go with my notes. My husband and I have been residents of North Branch since 96. We have a 13-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. What did you say? It was 10 years since our last levy that was passed.
At least,
I was thinking more like 12 to 13, but, you know. Anyway, we've always supported the levies when they've run in North Branch. You know, members of the community will say, you know, why do you feel that we need to pass this? Well, they think, you know, expenses are all going into administration. You know, so then you defend that piece and so forth. But as a parent, you know, we've always supported that. And right now we're on a 4-day school week. So this is a thorn in my side.
We appreciate your activism and, you know, bringing the case not only for your family but for hundreds, thousands of others that share these concerns. So we know it's very trying time.
I just see that, you know, the effects of how it's impacting, like, my elementary students. He gets it, but it just is like, I'm concerned about, he's just right on the edge. So, I just am concerned that what's going to happen with the students in the elementary level right now, and when they get into middle school, where are their MCA scores going to be? My daughter going into high school, you know, I mean, the elective opportunities are not there as there are in other districts. I'm sorry, kind of emotional about this, but...
You don't have to apologize. You're doing great.
But, you know, in order to keep my elementary school student where he needs to be, you know, we brought in a tutor on Mondays to help him, just so he can maintain where he's at. I mean, he'll be fine, you know, I'm just a mother hen, but... you know, I don't want him to fall behind. And I feel like, you know, if this bill passes, like, hopefully we're going to be able to get back to a 5-day school week to, you know, lessen the class sizes. You know, as my daughter goes into high school, that is a huge factor in the sizes. I mean, the elementary schools the class sizes are large as well. But I hear that more so now on the high school level. So these are just, you know, a few of my concerns. And like I said, and then once they get out into the community, you know, I believe it was earlier this year, the Commissioner of Education talked about, like, 70% of jobs when they get out into the working field, they're going to need college educations. Well, you know, we just want to make sure that they have a good foundation. So, what else do I have here? I think that's about it. You know, I've cried on your shoulder enough, so thank you for giving me this opportunity, but I highly ask that you would pass this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ball. You were very effective.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
To you, Ms. Bilal. You know, I don't know what a program looks like when you have a four-day school week. Is it a longer day or
Incredibly longer day. The elementary school starts at they have Mondays off, and they go Tuesday through Friday. School for the elementary students starts at, I believe it's 7:50 or 8 o'clock, and then they get released at 3:53. So it's an incredibly long day, number one. You know, number two, when you talk about, like, how much are they actually retaining? I mean, and these are just gen ed students. These are not special ed students. You know, I can't imagine what, you know, that, how hard that is for, you know, special ed students. But, yeah, it's an incredibly long day. You know, they come home from school and they're crabby and they're tired. And then you try and put, you know, I'm a hockey mom, a soccer mom, a tennis mom, basketball mom, I mean, track mom. We're going all year round. So, you know, any type of family dinner is going to take place at about 7 o'clock. And then you fit homework and everything else into it. It is an incredibly long day. But, you know, I look at our surrounding districts, and I, you know, when I see how long the Chisago Lake students, you know, they're released, you know, at 2:45. I mean, because they're on a 5-day school week. And just to tell you this quick, like, my 9-year-old says to me the other day in the car, he goes, Mom, he goes, do you think I would remember a lot more, you know, if we went to school, like, for half a day, 6 days a week? Okay, so he's thinking. I mean, he's obviously hearing my frustration, but it is a long day for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. Further questions or comments from committee members? Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nienau, the Hoffman bill, were you following whether or not that would help you? And if you said that while I was out of the room, I apologize.
Yeah, Senator Bonhoff, I don't know how the dollar figures would run out. It certainly would likely be somewhat beneficial, but I'd have to look at numbers in front of me to be able to say specifically.
Mr. Lundell, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I couldn't give you an exact number, but I think all but a handful of C districts are below the 1,600 number that is in the Hoffman bill. So that would put, I think our concentrations vary widely within schools for equity and education. I think that in case of like Senator Jensen's district probably has a higher compensatory count than, say, Senator Pratt's district. But none of them are reaching the levels of concentration. They're mostly around the state average and some well below. So.
And Senator Nienau, do you know your free and reduced in this particular North Branch percentage?
I couldn't give you the number. It would be a little higher than average in a statewide average.
Okay.
North Branch is an ex-urban district on just north of the cities on I-35. So yeah, there's a fair number of maybe Brad knows the number. There's a fair number of commuting families that the bedroom community. They live there, work in the cities, making you know decent money. But there's also a fair aspect of it that's pretty rural.
Mr. Chair, just final point. I mean, I don't think there's anybody at this table that thinks we should have a 4-day work or school week. So that's just got to solve it somehow, boy.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Lundell.
I was going to add to Senator Bonhoff's question. I think that we've seen growing numbers of reduced price lunch. The districts that are represented here today took a big hit during the housing crisis. Not that every district didn't in the state, but these are districts that housing values, you know, $350,000 houses were selling for $175,000. It was, and a lot of those, you know, along that kind of donut around the metropolitan area, these are the areas that were hit hardest in that loss of value, which has then driven up, what's caused all kinds of issues with income and with. A lot of these districts were growing districts that are no longer growing because the housing market went the way it was. So a lot of people were planning on growth. I think, and what then you've seen is a growing number of free and reduced price lunch. But the same issue is in the Anoka-Hennepin district is that the district, the schools tend to be bigger, and they don't reach concentration levels. And so I think that's I'm not going to sit here and, you know, Senator Pogano will be working my other ear. God, when he's done with Denny, he'll start in on me. But the thing is, I don't have a real problem with concentration, but I do think there has to be a look at a lot of these issues and how we bring districts that can't reach concentration up to getting the revenue that they need. It's a balance between general education and the categoricals. We've talked about that.
Yep.
And I think it's, you know, you guys have a big puzzle in front of you, and hopefully all the pieces come from the same puzzle.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to tap on Senator Bonhoeff, I think in the issue of districts like North Branch or your C districts, it's really the inability to pass that levy, which then gets them down to zero, and then, you know, they're making some really tough choices. I think, you know, if Senator Stump was here, he would, you know, the history of the general ed levy and the history of the, you know, fixing that issue of equalization is more important. I mean, those are some issues that I think are germane to this. I'm sitting here, I missed out on the first part of it, but I knew exactly what she was, because I hear the same stories every day, and I think, you know, let's fix this long term.
Thank you. Further comments from the committee? And Superintendent Hansen, is your enrollment declining or stabilized, or give us a picture of where things are at?
We're in the middle of a really fun anomaly. Our enrollment is stabilized, and we've grown a little bit. It's because we've open enrollment. We brought in all-day, everyday kindergarten. It was a cost to the district. We looked at it. We gathered students from other school districts, and we've retained them. Two of our neighbors are now looking at going to all-day, everyday kindergarten to stop the loss of their kids. Some of the programs and the things that we've done, we've got a phenomenal special ed program, so we've been able to grab students that way. The last 2 years are the first 2 years in a long time that we had a net gain for those years only. We're still a net loss in open enrollment. We lose kids to other school districts because of their programs. But the last 2 years, we were finally a net gain for those years only. So we've seen some things turn around. When I look at, you're talking about the free and reduced lunch, we're at about 45% free and reduced lunch. The numbers I'm going to give you are based on the federal census of 2010. 50% of our families earn less than $50,000 a year. 67% of our households are valued at under $200,000. That was based in 2010. And I know the numbers of the value of those properties has dropped since then. When I was first, or when I first arrived in Malacca 4 years ago, the average home value was just over $100,000. It dropped now to about $75,000 across the district. And that's a story you'd hear in other places. For those of you that aren't sure where Malacca is, because there's usually a confusion, if you go about 60 miles north of here on 169, you'll go to Elk River, Princeton. 15 miles further north is Malacca. We're about 40 miles south of Mille Lacs Lake. Many people think we're on the lake. Okay, yeah. So if you're going fishing, you got to go right through us. Don't stop there. Okay, so that's where we are.
Thank you, Superintendent. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonhoeff. Thank you. I just have a preliminary run based on our researchers. It looks like North Branch under the bill I want would get an additional $497,968 a year. So that would basically fix the issue that we're talking about on hand. So based on the 45% concentration of poverty, I mean, they're a winner in that. So.
Senator Nienau and testifiers, thank you for so eloquently stating the need. And Senator Nienau, would you like to wrap up? Any comments?
Mr. Chair, just final comment on the bill, I guess. This is a proposal of many we've seen over the years to try to get at this particular issue. The school districts that are members of C, Schools for Equity in Education, generally you're talking about districts that have lower property wealth, lower commercial industrial bases, which help spread the ability to pay for these local levies. When you're looking at particularly in the and I don't know Malacca as well because I don't represent them. I think Senator Brown does. But particularly when you look at the Chisago-Isani County areas, that's where I grew up. North Branch is my school district that I went to for most of my school years, somewhere in the trophy case, there's a ninth grade football team trophy. We were undefeated, so my name's on the trophy somewhere. And I think they misspelled it too, Mr. Chair. So I grew up there. I've watched it change. When I first campaigned for office in 2002, I remember driving around with my kids going, you know that field over there? I used to play, you know, hide and seek in the corn, and those houses over there. I used to play hide and seek in the corn when it was a field. We used to have farmers that grow corn, and in the last 10 years, I would joke that we grew houses. That completely changed. I'm told that the district that I currently represent has the highest number of construction trades union members of any Senate district in the state. That industry has been going through it. We were in a recession. They were in a depression. And so you have those kinds of dynamics. And when local governments have to build the infrastructure for that tremendous influx of homes, it's very, very expensive. And they amortize that cost over a period of years. You don't just stop paying for it when the people stop moving in. And then when they all leave and you see record high foreclosures, the district that I represent had one of the highest foreclosure rates in the state. The homeowners just can't vote yes. They just can't. And then when businesses are seeing the property taxes hit so hard and the people aren't there, and then the businesses start to close, and you get into this spiral. And it's very, very difficult for the schools. And North Branch tried to accommodate it, save a few hundred thousand dollars by going to 4-day school week. And now there's questions of, did they become a net winner or net loser because of open enrollment to adjoining school districts? And then losing that revenue for those students. So it's districts like that. And the stories that I'm telling you are not unique to the Cambridge and North Branch school districts. Mr. Lundell could tell you story after story. But those are the challenges that they're facing out there.
Thank you very much, Serenino. And Ms. Boyle, you tell the family you did great. And we especially like to get the parent perspective because we know you're the number one person and working with staff that's going to shape that child's future. So, and that's what we're all about, and hopefully can get it better. We will lay Senate File 929 over for possible inclusion. Next, we have Senate File 1214, Senator Hayden for Minneapolis Community Standards Initiative. Welcome, Senator Hayden.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. How are you today?
Happy spring.
Good. Yeah, so good to see you. It feels like spring out there.
It's a dreamer.
Good. Well, Mr. Chair, members, I have Senate File 1214, the Community Standards Initiative. I'm pleased to introduce it. I hope that you would consider it for possible inclusion in your finance bill. This is a good bill that represents the need to support our community so that their students are better ready to learn. This morning, I have, many of you know, I have Coach Larry McKenzie with me. He's going to speak about the Community Standards Initiative, but I do want to highlight a few points. CSI, or Community Standards Initiative, as we call it, Minnesota, will work deeply and broadly in communities, particularly in communities of color, leading the struggle to reclaim our students' future in our community. CSI Minnesota creates a starting place for a common journey together and initiates a process that will free us from disagreements and rivalries and make it possible to establish partnerships and collaborations we need to build healthy and sustainable communities. We've all seen the achievement gap in Minnesota, and I think there's real work to be done to improve outcomes for our students. And I'm happy to see this group come forward to do real, meaningful work in our communities. Mr. Chair, members, we have a good group of folks as I've introduced, Coach McKenzie will talk about CSI, but it also is a group that includes Clarence Hightower. Many of you know is the president of Community Action of Ramsey in Washington County, who also is the board chair. The board chair of the trustees of MNSCU, as well as Dr. Bravada Akinsaka, who is a leading psychologist in Minneapolis that works with some of our troubled kids. We also have Mr. Al Flowers, who is here, who is doing the outreach in the communities in which I think we are that we have the most trouble, and a host of other folks that are working very hard to really, really, really work with our most troubled communities. We talk about the achievement gap. There is a group We all kind of know who they are, and I have found that we have had difficulty working directly with those families that are in the most need, the folks that we kind of talk about, especially in this committee, and all the great work and appropriations that we've given. I found that often we are not kind of talking to those families or talking to the people who are closest to those families and those children. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to Coach McKenzie.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Again, just a little bit about my background. I'm a
Coach, for the tape, please state your full name.
Larry McKenzie. Most folks in the community know me as Coach McKenzie, a longtime coach at Minneapolis Patrick Henry, where I am proud to say I won four consecutive state titles. But more importantly, what I'm here to say.
Yeah.
More importantly is during that tenure, I was blessed to work with what would be considered these students. And I am more proud of talking about the titles to say that in my 14-year tenure as a head varsity basketball coach, every young man that have played for me has gone on to college, either 2-year or 4-year. 10 of those young men now have college degrees and are working back in Minneapolis Public Schools. So I am here to speak on behalf of this bill to ask you give considerations to, again, funding for Community Standards Initiative. And in a nutshell, what this bill is about, as Senator Hayden has already said, I mean, this bill is really about a collaborative of community coming together with the understanding of knowing the challenge of reaching our toughest kids and our toughest families. The Community Standards Initiative is really about giving empowerment. It's about not giving fish, but teaching our kids and our families how to fish. And so a group in the community have got together to come together around, first of all, starting with values, about changing attitudes. We believe that attitudes determine altitudes. And so we're here today, again, to ask you for consideration of support for funding of the Community Standards Initiatives.
Thank you, Coach. And Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Coach, I represent the Hopkins School District, and we have a fierce rivalry in basketball with you, and I appreciate – I've been at Patrick Henry. My son played, and so I've seen the work of your kids and your team. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Senator Hayden, you mentioned other persons that are here in support. Would they like to offer a statement for the record?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think if – I'm not sure if they were prepared to testify. We didn't know how
they
much
They'd just
time.
Like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Good.
Welcome to the committee. We appreciate you taking time to visit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could just say one thing, they said
and
it all.
Your name for the record?
Al Flowers, and I do work in the community, and Coach McKenzie said it best about values and bringing values back to the community, and that's what this all is all about. We came up with it when I went to a daycare, child care center, and I watched kids and our young kids, little African-American kids, and saying different kind of curse words, but they couldn't say their ABCs. And so it became a value thing to me about bringing values back to our community, us taking responsibility for some of the things that's going on in our community concerning the achievement gap. So this is a big initiative in our community, working on other things economically in the community. But I figure we can't get those economics if we are not educated and getting it. So I know in the years to come, minority communities will be growing in 2020 and 2040, the population will grow of minorities. And if they're not prepared to go in the workforce in the real world, then we'll be in trouble. So this is a big initiative in general to get going, and it's about responsibility and everybody being held accountable, not playing a blame game, but being held accountable, and that's that's what this initiative is about. We all want to be held responsible. So as we want to hold the Senate and the House responsible, we must be responsible too. And so that's what this is all about.
Good. And thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may add, just on the back of the handout that they gave you, this is a collaborative group of people, and some of the more institutional partners, as you can see, is the Minneapolis Public Schools, the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, Summit Academy, OIC, Turning Point, which is a chemical health rehabilitation center, the local radio station KMOJ, the Minneapolis NAACP, the Minneapolis Urban League, Urban Homeworks, the Minneapolis Spokesman Recorder, which is a African-American, the oldest African-American newspaper in the state, and then also the collaborative organization Emerge. So as you can see, Mr. Chair, members, this is a real grassroots initiative to really, really work with the families that we know are struggling the most. And I hope with your, as you deliberate and we start to figure out how we think about allocating and appropriating dollars in the state, that you give consideration to this initiative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hayden. Questions, comments from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Not? Yes. Please come up and state your name for the record. Welcome.
My name is Abdurizak Bihi, A-B-D-I-R-I-Z-A-K, last name B-I-H-I. I'm here to work with Al and the community. I'm the Executive Director of Somali Education and Social Advocacy Center in Minneapolis. We have the same problems, and I know what the problems of youth are. My nephew made international headlines when he was recruited by Al-Qaeda from here, and I was the first person to speak out. I'm working with Senator Hayden and the community to learn how to find resources so we can engage our young people into a positive thing. I think this is very important. We're going to be part of this. The African-American leadership is trying to bring in the Somali or African community so they can learn how to advocate and also how to engage young people into our positive things. And I appreciate your help in this. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming forward and for your efforts. Senator Hayden, excellent job. We'll be laying this over for possible inclusion, and we'll be rolling that out in a couple of weeks. So any concluding remarks?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate your consideration.
Good. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
And testifiers, Senate File 1214 will be laid over. Before I go to other announcements, I was going to ask Senator Dahl to share a few comments that are in the news right now.
Mr. Chair, and first of all, I'll just preface my remarks saying everyone is safe, no one injured, and unfortunately we have another shooter in a school, and this is the New Prague School District. They went into a code red lockdown, their middle school, and maybe even the high school, but I think it was in the middle school. So last reports, everyone safe, no one's injured. And so we have we've talked a lot about how we educate our young people this in our committee here, but also we have to consider how we're keeping them safe in our schools. And so as you go forward today, think about the parents, the community, the kids at New Prague. And again, it's too bad we have to report things like this, but ultimately, at least as far as I know, everyone is safe, no one injured. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you for sharing that, Senator Dahl. Hearts go out to everyone involved, and I understand things are stabilized. So. Okay, members, you have tomorrow's agenda topics. That includes an overview of the education policy bill, and Senator Ray, and any just overview comments you wanted to share now. You're going to have the department and provide comments. We're not going to take amendments at this point, but any additional introductory comments you want to make at this point regarding that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did a lot of work in that bill, and there are most of the provisions that are in it are provisions that came from the department. We have a few bills that were incorporated into that, and I think we work very hard to come together. Still have a few things that people may want to review in this committee, related to evaluation. But overall, I think we did a tremendous amount of work to kind of come together. So you will see, a product of really a lot of review and a lot of work that I hope is bipartisan as it moves forward.
Okay. Very good. As you know, the House has announced target information. The Senate will be soon. And we will have a discussion regarding that as we go about our business and put together the bill. Tentatively, the plan is when we return from break, April 8th, you'll see that. That's the tentative plan. Hopefully, we can stay on that. And during that week, we would get that passed out of committee within a couple of days. I've re-extend an invitation for any of you that wants to meet individually to talk about something. Please let me know. I have done that, and I appreciate that. If there's particular amendments that you're entertaining, I understand, you know, you can save those for the floor if you need to, but if you, or later, earlier, but maybe we can make it a better bill in a purple fashion, as they say, working bipartisanly. We had some very good examples, I think, in policy where I believe a couple of items were put together. So I just extend that out to members and to talk to one another as that happens. Each request for a bill hearing has been honored, as far as I know. And sometimes it might have been routed to a different committee, or it goes to finance first. Everything we do goes comes from finance and goes back to the parent committee. If it's not here yet, I imagine it'll be here soon. I know that we will have Senator Housley's bill coming up for Forest Lake, but if there's anyone else that feels they haven't been heard, that's not me. So please let me know. But time is running out now, so fourth warning. Any comments, questions at this point? Good. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, earlier Senator Huffman alluded to the run that he had pertaining to his bill. I was wondering if we as members of the committee could get a copy of that, mm-hmm. and then also if we could get a copy of a run for Senator Enow's bill. That would be possible.
Mr. Chair and members, definitely. As I mentioned, for the first bill, I want to check my findings against the fiscal note, make sure that we're sort of on the same page, and I will make both of those runs available to the committee today.
Thank you.
Very good. There be no further announcements. Committee is adjourned.